2. By evening of the second day, Rokanan was stiff and windburned, but had learned to sit easy in the high saddle and to guide with some skill the great flying beast from Hallen Stables. Now the pink air of the long, slow sunset stretched above and beneath him, levels of rose-crystal light. The wind steeds were flying high to stay as long as they could in sunlight, for like great cats they loved warmth. Mogian on his black hunter, a stallion, would you call it, Rokanan wondered, or a tom, was looking down, seeking a camping place, for wind steeds would not fly in darkness. Two midmen soared behind on smaller white mounts, pink-winged in the afterglow of the great sun Fomalhaut. "Look there, Star-Lord!" Rokanan's steed checked and snarled, seeing what Mogian was pointing to. A little black object moving low across the sky ahead of them, dragging behind it through the evening quiet a faint rattling noise. Rokanan gestured that they land at once. In the forest glade where they alighted, Mogian asked, "Was that a ship like yours, Star-Lord?" "No, it was a planet-bound ship, a helicopter. It could only have been brought here on a ship much larger than mine was, a star frigate or a transport. They must be coming here in force, and they must have started out before I did. What are they doing here, anyhow, with bombers and helicopters? They could shoot us right out of the sky from a long way off. We'll have to watch out for them, Lord Mogian." "The thing was flying up from the clay fields. I hope they were not there before us." Rokanan only nodded, heavy with anger at the sight of that black spot on the sunset, that roach on a clean world. Whoever these people were that had bombed an unarmed survey ship at sight, they evidently meant to survey this planet and take it over for colonization or for some military use. The high-intelligence life forms of the planet, of which there were at least three species, all of low technological achievement, they would ignore or enslave or extirpate, whichever was most convenient. For to an aggressive people, only technology mattered. "And there," Rokanan said to himself as he watched the midmen unsaddle the wind steeds and loose them for their night's hunting, "right there, perhaps, was the League's own weak spot. Only technology mattered." The two missions to this world in the last century had started pushing one of the species toward a pre-atomic technology before they had even explored the other continents or contacted all intelligent races. He had called a halt to that and had finally managed to bring his own ethnographic survey here to learn something about the planet. But he did not fool himself. Even his work here would finally have served only as an informational basis for encouraging technological advance in the most likely species or culture. This was how the League of All Worlds prepared to meet its ultimate enemy. 100 worlds had been trained and armed. 1,000 more were being schooled in the uses of steel and wheel and tractor and reactor. But Rokanan the Hilfer, whose job was learning, not teaching, and who had lived on quite a few backward worlds, doubted the wisdom of staking everything on weapons and the uses of machines. Dominated by the aggressive, tool-making humanoid species of Centaurus, Earth, and the Cetians, the League had slighted certain skills and powers and potentialities of intelligent life and judged by too narrow a standard. 2. By evening of the second day, Rokanan was stiff and windburned, but had learned to sit easy in the high saddle and to guide with some skill the great flying beast from Hallen Stables. Now the pink air of the long, slow sunset stretched above and beneath him, levels of rose-crystal light. The wind steeds were flying high to stay as long as they could in sunlight, for like great cats they loved warmth. Mogian on his black hunter, a stallion, would you call it, Rokanan wondered, or a tom, was looking down, seeking a camping place, for wind steeds would not fly in darkness. Two midmen soared behind on smaller white mounts, pink-winged in the afterglow of the great sun Fomalhaut. "Look there, Star-Lord!" Rokanan's steed checked and snarled, seeing what Mogian was pointing to. A little black object moving low across the sky ahead of them, dragging behind it through the evening quiet a faint rattling noise. Rokanan gestured that they land at once. In the forest glade where they alighted, Mogian asked, "Was that a ship like yours, Star-Lord?" "No, it was a planet-bound ship, a helicopter. It could only have been brought here on a ship much larger than mine was, a star frigate or a transport. They must be coming here in force, and they must have started out before I did. What are they doing here, anyhow, with bombers and helicopters? They could shoot us right out of the sky from a long way off. We'll have to watch out for them, Lord Mogian." "The thing was flying up from the clay fields. I hope they were not there before us." Rokanan only nodded, heavy with anger at the sight of that black spot on the sunset, that roach on a clean world. Whoever these people were that had bombed an unarmed survey ship at sight, they evidently meant to survey this planet and take it over for colonization or for some military use. The high-intelligence life forms of the planet, of which there were at least three species, all of low technological achievement, they would ignore or enslave or extirpate, whichever was most convenient. For to an aggressive people, only technology mattered. And there, Rokanan said to himself as he watched the midmen unsaddle the wind steeds and loose them for their night's hunting, right there, perhaps, was the League's own weak spot. Only technology mattered. The two missions to this world in the last century had started pushing one of the species toward a pre-atomic technology before they had even explored the other continents or contacted all intelligent races. He had called a halt to that, and had finally managed to bring his own ethnographic survey here to learn something about the planet. But he did not fool himself. Even his work here would finally have served only as an informational basis for encouraging technological advance in the most likely species or culture. This was how the League of All Worlds prepared to meet its ultimate enemy. 100 worlds had been trained and armed. 1,000 more were being schooled in the uses of steel and wheel and tractor and reactor. But Rokanan the Hilfer, whose job was learning, not teaching, and who had lived on quite a few backward worlds, doubted the wisdom of staking everything on weapons and the uses of machines. Dominated by the aggressive, tool-making humanoid species of Centaurus, Earth, and the Cetians, the League had slighted certain skills and powers and potentialities of intelligent life and judged by too narrow a standard. This world, which did not even have a name yet beyond Fomalhaut II, would probably never get much attention paid to it, for before the League's arrival, none of its species seemed to have got beyond the lever and the forge. Other races on other worlds could be pushed ahead faster, to help when the extragalactic enemy returned at last. No doubt this was inevitable. He thought of Mogian offering to fight a fleet of light-speed bombers with the swords of Halon. But what if light-speed or even FTL bombers were very much like bronze swords compared to the weapons of the enemy? What if the weapons of the enemy were things of the mind? Would it not be well to learn a little of the different shapes minds come in and their powers? The League's policy was too narrow. It led to too much waste, and now evidently it had led to rebellion. If the storm brewing on Faraday 10 years ago had broken, it meant that a young League world, having learned war promptly and been armed, was now out to carve its own empire from the stars. He and Mogian and the two dark-haired servants gnawed hunks of good hard bread from the kitchens of Halon, drank yellow vascan from a skin flask, and soon settled to sleep. Very high all around their small fire stood the trees, dark branches laden with sharp, dark, closed cones. In the night, a cold, fine rain whispered through the forest. Rokanan pulled the feathery Herilo fur bedroll up over his head and slept all the long night in the whisper of the rain. The Winsteeds came back at daybreak, and before sunrise they were aloft again, wind riding toward the pale lands near the gulf where the clay folk dwelt. Landing about noon in a field of raw clay, Rokanan and the two servants, Raho and Yahan, looked about blankly, seeing no sign of life. Mogian said with the absolute confidence of his caste, "They'll come." And they came. The squat hominoids Rokanan had seen in the museum years ago, six of them, not much taller than Rokanan's chest or Mogian's belt. They were naked, a whitish-gray color like their clay fields, a singularly earthy-looking lot. When they spoke, they were uncanny, for there was no telling which one spoke. It seemed they all did, but with one harsh voice. Partial colonial telepathy, Rokanan recalled from the handbook, and looked with increased respect at the ugly little men with their rare gift. His three tall companions evinced no such feeling. They looked grim. This world, which did not even have a name yet beyond Fomalhaut II, would probably never get much attention paid to it, for before the League's arrival none of its species seemed to have got beyond the lever and the forge. Other races on other worlds could be pushed ahead faster, to help when the extragalactic enemy returned at last. No doubt this was inevitable. He thought of Mogian offering to fight a fleet of light-speed bombers with the swords of Halon. But what if light-speed or even FTL bombers were very much like bronze swords compared to the weapons of the enemy? What if the weapons of the enemy were things of the mind? Would it not be well to learn a little of the different shapes minds come in, and their powers? The League's policy was too narrow. It led to too much waste, and now evidently it had led to rebellion. If the storm brewing on Faraday 10 years ago had broken, it meant that a young League world, having learned war promptly and been armed, was now out to carve its own empire from the stars. He and Mogian and the two dark-haired servants gnawed hunks of good hard bread from the kitchens of Halon, drank yellow vascan from a skin flask, and soon settled to sleep. Very high all around their small fire stood the trees, dark branches laden with sharp, dark, closed cones. In the night, a cold, fine rain whispered through the forest. Rokanan pulled the feathery Herilo fur bedroll up over his head and slept all the long night in the whisper of the rain. The Winsteeds came back at daybreak, and before sunrise they were aloft again, wind riding toward the pale lands near the gulf where the clay folk dwelt. Landing about noon in a field of raw clay, Rokanan and the two servants, Raho and Yahan, looked about blankly, seeing no sign of life. Mogian said with the absolute confidence of his caste, "They'll come." And they came. The squat hominoids Rokanan had seen in the museum years ago, six of them, not much taller than Rokanan's chest or Mogian's belt. They were naked, a whitish-gray color like their clay fields, a singularly earthy-looking lot. When they spoke, they were uncanny, for there was no telling which one spoke. It seemed they all did, but with one harsh voice. Partial colonial telepathy, Rokanan recalled from the handbook, and looked with increased respect at the ugly little men with their rare gift. His three tall companions evinced no such feeling. They looked grim. "What do the Angiar and the servants of the Angiar wish in the field of the Lords of Night?" one of the claymen, or all of them, was or were asking in the common tongue, an Angiar dialect used by all species. "I am the Lord of Halon," said Mogian, looking gigantic. "With me stands Rokanan, master of stars and the ways between the night, servant of the League of All Worlds, guest and friend of the kinfolk of Halon. High honor is due him. Take us to those fit to parley with us. There are words to be spoken, for soon there will be snow in warm year, and winds blowing backward, and trees growing upside down. The way the Angiar talked was a real pleasure, Rokanan thought, though its tact was not what struck you. The claymen stood about in dubious silence. "Truly this is so?" they, or one of them, asked at last. "Yes, and the sea will turn to wood, and stones will grow toes. Take us to your chiefs, who know what a Star-Lord is, and waste no time." More silence. Standing among the little troglodytes, Rokanan had an uneasy sense as of moth wings brushing past his ears. A decision was being reached. "Come," said the claymen aloud, and led off across the sticky field. They gathered hurriedly around a patch of earth, stooped, then stood aside, revealing a hole in the ground and a ladder sticking out of it, the entrance to the domain of night. While the midmen waited above ground with the steeds, Mogian and Rokanan climbed down the ladder into a cave world of crossing, branching tunnels cut in the clay and lined with coarse cement, electric-lighted, smelling of sweat and stale food. Padding on flat gray feet behind them, the guards took them to a half-lit, round chamber like a bubble in a great rock stratum, and left them there alone. They waited. They waited longer. Why the devil had the first surveys picked these people to encourage for league membership? Rokanan had a perhaps unworthy explanation. Those first surveys had been from Cold Centaurus, and the explorers had dived rejoicing into the caves of the Gdemiar, escaping the blinding floods of light and heat from the great A3 sun. To them, sensible people lived underground on a world like this. To Rokanan, the hot white sun and the bright nights of quadruple moonlight, the intense weather changes and ceaseless winds, the rich air and light gravity that permitted so many airborne species, were all not only compatible but enjoyable. But, he reminded himself, just by that he was less well qualified than the Centaurans to judge these cave folk. They were certainly clever. They were also telepathic, a power much rarer and much less well understood than electricity. But the first surveys had not made anything of that. They had given the Gdemiar a generator and a lock-drive ship and some math and some pats on the back and left them. What had the little men done since? He asked a question along this line of Mogian. The young lord, who had certainly never seen anything but a candle or a resin torch in his life, glanced without the least interest at the electric light bulb over his head. "They have always been good at making things," he said, with his extraordinary, straightforward arrogance. "Have they made new sorts of things lately? We buy our steel swords from the clay folk. They had smiths who could work steel in my grandfather's time, but before that I don't know. My people have lived a long time with clay folk, suffering them to tunnel beneath our borderlands, trading them silver for their swords. They are said to be rich, but forays on them are taboo. Wars between two breeds are evil matters, as you know. Even when my grandfather, Durhal, sought his wife here, thinking they had stolen her, he would not break the taboo to force them to speak. They will neither lie nor speak truth if they can help it. We do not love them, and they do not love us. I think they remember old days before the taboo. They are not brave." A mighty voice boomed out behind their backs. "Bow down before the presence of the Lords of Night." Rokanan had his hand on his laser gun, and Mogian both hands on his sword hilts as they turned. But Rokanan immediately spotted the speaker set in the curving wall, and murmured to Mogian, "Don't answer."
"Speak, O strangers in the caverns of the Night Lords."
The sheer blare of sound was intimidating, but Mogian stood there without a blink, his high-arching eyebrows indolently raised. Presently he said, "Now you've wind-ridden 3 days, Lord Rokanan. Do you begin to see the pleasure of it?"
"Speak, and you shall be heard."
I do. And the striped steed goes light as the west wind in warm year, Rokanan said, quoting a compliment overheard at table in the revel hall. He's of very good stock.
Speak! You are heard!
They discussed windsteed breeding while the wall bellowed at them. Eventually, two claymen appeared in the tunnel.
Come, they said stolidly.
They led the strangers through further mazes to a very neat little electric train system, like a giant but effective toy, on which they rode several miles more at a good clip, leaving the clay tunnels for what appeared to be a limestone cave area. The last station was at the mouth of a fiercely lighted hall, at the far end of which three troglodytes stood waiting on a dais. At first, to Rokanan's shame as an ethnologist, they all looked alike, as Chinamen had to the Dutch, as Russians had to the Centaurans. Then he picked out the individuality of the central clayman, whose face was lined, white, and powerful under an iron crown.
What does the Star-Lord seek in the caverns of the mighty?
The formality of the common tongue suited Rokanan's need precisely as he answered, I had hoped to come as a guest to these caverns, to learn the ways of the Night Lords and see the wonders of their making. I hope yet to do so, but ill doings are afoot, and I come now in haste and need. I am an officer of the League of All Worlds. I ask you to bring me to the starship which you keep as a pledge of the League's confidence in you. The three stared impassively. The dais put them on a level with Rokanan. Seen thus on a level, their broad, ageless faces and rock-hard eyes were impressive. Then, grotesquely, the left-hand one spoke in Pigeon Galactic.
No ship, he said.
There is a ship. After a minute, the one repeated ambiguously,
No ship.
Speak the common tongue. I ask your help. There is an enemy to the League on this world. It will be your world no longer if you admit that enemy.
No ship, said the left-hand clayman.
The other two stood like stalagmites. Then must I tell the other lords of the League that the clay folk have betrayed their trust and are unworthy to fight in the war to come. Silence.
Trust is on both sides, or neither, the iron-crowned clayman in the center said in the common tongue.
Would I ask your help if I did not trust you? Will you do this at least for me? Send the ship with a message to Kerguelen. No one need ride it and lose the ears. It will go itself. Silence again.
No ship, said the left-hand one in his gravel voice.
Come, Lord Mogian, said Rokanan, and turned his back on them.
Those who betray the Star-Lords, said Mogian in his clear, arrogant voice, betray older pacts. You made our swords of old, clayfolk. They have not got rusty.
And he strode out beside Rokanan, following the stumpy gray guides who led them in silence back to the railway and through the maze of dank, glaring corridors and up at last into the light of day. They wind-rode a few miles west to get clear of clayfolk territory and landed on the bank of a forest river to take counsel. Mogian felt he had let his guest down. He was not used to being thwarted in his generosity, and his self-possession was a little shaken.
Cave grubs, he said, cowardly vermin. They will never say straight out what they have done or will do. All the small folk are like that, even the Fia. But the Fia can be trusted. Do you think the clay folk gave the ship to the enemy?
How can we tell?
I know this. They would give it to no one unless they were paid its price twice over. Things, things! They think of nothing but heaping up things. What did the old one mean, trust must be on both sides?
I think he meant that his people feel that we, the League, betrayed them. First we encourage them, then suddenly for 45 years we drop them, send them no messages, discourage their coming, tell them to look after themselves. And that was my doing, though they don't know it. Why should they do me a favor, after all? I doubt they've talked with the enemy yet, but it would make no difference if they did bargain away the ship. The enemy could do even less with it than I could have done. Rokanan stood looking down at the bright river. His shoulders stooped. Rokanan, said Mogian, for the first time speaking to him as to a kinsman. Near this forest live my cousins of Kiodor, a strong castle, 30 Angiar swordsmen, and 3 villages of midmen. They will help us punish the clayfolk for their insolence.
No, Rokanan spoke heavily. Tell your people to keep an eye on the clayfolk, yes. They might be bought over by this enemy. But there will be no taboos broken or wars fought on my account. There is no point to it. In times like this, Mogian, one man's fate is not important.
If it is not, said Mogian, raising his dark face, what is?
Lords, said the slender young midman, Jahan, someone's over there among the trees.
He pointed across the river to a flicker of color among the dark conifers.
Fia, said Mogian, look at the wind steeds. All 4 of the big beasts were looking across the river, ears pricked.
Mogian Hallenlord walks the Fia's ways in friendship.
Mogian's voice rang over the broad, shallow, clattering water. And presently, in mixed light and shadow under the trees on the other shore, a small figure appeared. It seemed to dance a little as spots of sunlight played over it, making it flicker and change, hard to keep the eyes on. When it moved, Rokanan thought it was walking on the surface of the river, so lightly it came, not stirring the sunlit shallows. The striped wind steed rose and stalked softly on thick, hollow-boned legs to the water's edge. As the Fian waded out of the water, the big beast bowed its head, and the Fian reached up and scratched the striped furry ears. Then he came toward them.
"Hail, Mogian, Hala's heir, sun-haired, sword-bearer!"
The voice was thin and sweet as a child's, the figure short and light as a child's, but it was no child's face.
"Hail, Hallen guest, Star-Lord, Wanderer!"
Strange, large, light eyes turned for a moment full on Rokanan.
"The Fia know all names and news," said Mogian, smiling. But the little Fian did not smile in response. Even to Rokanan, who had only briefly visited one village of the species with a survey team, this was startling.
"Oh, Star-Lord," said the sweet, shaking voice, "who rides the wind ships that come and kill?"
"Kill? Your people?"
"All my village," the little man said. "I was with the flocks out on the hills. I mind-heard my people call, and I came, and they were in the flames burning and crying out. There were 2 ships with turning wings. They spat out fire. Now I am alone and must speak aloud. Where my people were in my mind, there is only fire and silence. Why was this done, lords?"
He looked from Rokanan to Mogian. Both were silent. He bent over like a man mortally hurt, crouching, and hid his face. Mogian stood over him, his hands on the hilts of his swords, shaking with anger.
"Now I swear vengeance on those who harmed the Fia. Rokanan, how can this be? The Fia have no swords, they have no riches, they have no enemy. Look, his people are all dead, those he speaks to without words, his tribesmen. No Fian lives alone. He will die alone. Why would they harm his people?"
"To make their power known," Rokanan said harshly. "Let us bring him to Hallen, Mogian." The tall lord knelt down by the little crouching figure.
"Fian, man's friend, ride with me. I cannot speak in your mind as your kinsman spoke, but airborne words are not all hollow."
In silence they mounted, the Fian riding the high saddle in front of Mogian like a child, and the 4 steeds rose up again on the air.
A rainy south wind favored their flight, and late the next day, under the beating of his steed's wing, Rokanan saw the marble stairway up through the forest, the chasm bridge across the green abyss, and the towers of Hallen in the long western light. The people of the castle, blonde lords and dark-haired servants, gathered around them in the flight court, full of the news of the burning of the castle nearest them to the east, Raohan, and the murder of all its people. Again, it had been a couple of helicopters and a few men armed with laser guns. The warriors and farmers of Raohan had been slaughtered without giving one stroke in return. The people of Hallen were half berserk with anger and defiance, into which came an element of awe when they saw the Fian riding with their young lord and heard why he was there. Many of them, dwellers in this northernmost fortress of Angian, had never seen one of the Fia before, but all knew them as the stuff of legends and the subject of a powerful taboo. An attack, however bloody, on one of their own castles fit into their warrior outlook, but an attack on the Fia was desecration. Awe and rage worked together in them. Late that evening, in his tower room, Rokanan heard the tumult from the revel hall below, where the Angiar of Hallen all were gathered, swearing destruction and extinction to the enemy in a torrent of metaphor and a thunder of hyperbole. They were a boastful race, the Angiar, vengeful, overweening, obstinate, illiterate, and lacking any first-person forms for the verb to be unable. There were no gods in their legends, only heroes. Through their distant racket, a near voice broke in, startling Rokanan so his hand jumped on the radio tuner. He had at last found the enemy's communication band. A voice rattled on, speaking a language Rokanan did not know. Luck would have been too good if the enemy had spoken Galactic. There were hundreds of thousands of languages among the worlds of the League, let alone the recognized planets such as this one, and the planets still unknown. The voice began reading a list of numbers, which Rokanan understood, for they were in Cetian, the language of a race whose mathematical attainments had led to the general use throughout the League of Cetian mathematics, and therefore Cetian numerals. He listened with strained attention, but it was no good, a mere string of numbers. The voice stopped suddenly, leaving only the hiss of static. Rokanan looked across the room to the little Fian, who had asked to stay with him, and now sat cross-legged and silent on the floor near the casement window. "That was the enemy, Kyo." The Fian's face was very still. "Kyo," said Rokanan. It was the custom to address a Fian by the Angiar name of his village, since individuals of the species perhaps did and perhaps did not have individual names. "Kyo, if you tried, could you mind hear the enemies?" In the brief notes from his one visit to a Fian village, Rokanan had commented that species 1B seldom answered direct questions directly, and he well remembered their smiling elusiveness. But Kyo, left desolate in the alien country of speech, answered what Rokanan asked him. "No, Lord," he said submissively. "Can you mind hear others of your own kind in other villages?"
"A little. If I lived among them, perhaps. Fia go sometimes to live in other villages than their own. It is said even that once the Fia and the Gdemiar mind spoke together as one people, but that was very long ago. It is said..." He stopped.
"Your people and the clay folk are indeed one race, though you follow very different ways now. What more, Kyo?"
"It is said that very long ago in the south, in the high places, the gray places, lived those who mind spoke with all creatures. All thoughts they could hear, the old ones, the most ancient. But we came down from the mountains and lived in the valleys and the caves and have forgotten the harder way."
Rokanan pondered a moment.
There were no mountains on the continent south of Hallen. He rose to get his handbook for Galactic Area 8 with its maps, when the radio, still hissing on the same band, stopped him short. A voice was coming through, much fainter, remote, rising and falling on billows of static, but speaking in Galactic. Number 6, come in. Number 6, come in. This is Foyer. Come in, Number 6. After endless repetitions and pauses, it continued. This is Friday. No, this is Friday. This is Foyer. Are you there, Number 6? The FTLs are due tomorrow, and I want a full report on the 7-6 sightings and the nets. Leave the staggering plan to the Eastern Detachment. Are you getting me, Number 6? We are going to be in Ansible communication with base tomorrow. Will you get me that information on the sightings at once? 7-6 sightings. Unnecessary. A surge of star noise swallowed the voice, and when it reemerged, it was audible only in snatches. 10 long minutes went by in static, silence, and snatches of speech. Then a nearer voice cut in, speaking quickly in the unknown language used before. It went on and on. Moveless, minute after minute, his hand still on the cover of his handbook, Rokanan listened. As moveless, the Fian sat in the shadows across the room. A double pair of numbers was spoken, then repeated. The second time, Rokanan caught the Cetian word for degrees. He flipped his notebook open and scribbled the numbers down. Then at last, though he still listened, he opened the handbook to the maps of Fomalhaut II. The numbers he had noted were 28 degrees, 28 to 121 degrees, 40. If they were coordinates of latitude and longitude, he brooded over the maps a while, setting the point of his pencil down a couple of times on blank open sea, then trying 121 west with 28 north, he came down just south of a range of mountains, halfway down the southwest continent. He sat gazing at the map. The radio voice had fallen silent.
Star, Lord?
I think they told me where they are. Maybe. And they've got an Ansible there. He looked up at Keo unseeingly, then back at the map. If they're down there, if I could get there and wreck their game, if I could get just one message out on their Ansible to the League, if I could... Southwest continent had been mapped only from the air, and nothing but the mountains and major rivers were sketched inside the coastlines. Hundreds of kilometers of blank, of unknown, and the goal merely guessed at. But I can't just sit here, Rokanan said. He looked up again and met the little man's clear, uncomprehending gaze. He paced down the stone-floored room and back. The radio hissed and whispered. There was one thing in his favor, the fact that the enemy would not be expecting him. They thought they had the planet all to themselves, but it was the only thing in his favor.
I'd like to use their weapons against them, he said. I think I'll try to find them. In the land to the south... My people were killed by these strangers, like yours, Keo. You and I are both alone, speaking a language not our own. I would rejoice in your companionship. He hardly knew what moved him to the suggestion. The shadow of a smile went across the Fian's face. He raised his hands, parallel and apart. Rushlight in sconces on the walls bowed and flickered and changed.
It was foretold that the Wanderer would choose companions, he said. For a while.
The Wanderer? Rokanan asked. But this time the Fian did not answer.